and welcome to Esteemed Women. It used to be called Silence, then it became Innovation, and now finally women are more empowered than ever to use their voices to express what it's really like to strive and thrive in what often tends to be a very imbalanced and unequal world. I'm sure it hasn't been easy, but these women have really achieved and accomplished. They're truly esteemed women who have chosen careers in science, technology, and innovation. They're typically go-getters, alpha females, hardworking, and maybe even just a little bit perfectionistic. But on the whole, they've applied their talents and skills to really make a difference. That was certainly my own intention when I started working as a mechanical engineer and fluid dynamicist. In these episodes, you'll get a chance to hear about some fascinating innovations, but you're also likely to be inspired and uplifted by the personal stories and experiences of my amazing guests. So let's hear it from my STEM sisters and incredibly esteemed women, Ramneek and Anurit Kanwar, the pilot twins.
My name is Ramneek Kanwar. I'm an 18-year-old STEM student who recently graduated from the Governor STEM Academy at Grassville High School. And right now, I'm taking a gap year to fly around the world.
And my name is Anurit Kanwar, and I'm her twin sister. I'm 18 as well. I'm graduated from the same high school, and I'm also going to be flying around the world.
Wow. Are you flying around the world together?
So we're going to be together, like flying together in formation, but we're not going to be in the same airplane. We're going to be in separate airplanes. So it's going to be a solo flight. But we're going to be like kind of like following each other. So just it's for like safety purposes in case something happens to one of us, the other person's there to help and call for help. So it's kind of like just for safety.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's a really brave thing to do. Why are you doing this?
We felt like this was the best way to reach as many people as possible. We're doing this journey for two like main causes, and that's STEM education and just bringing awareness to STEM as well as women's education. And we felt like if we what better way to, you know, have the whole world hear our purpose than fly around the world and go to every country, as many countries as we can, and talk to the people themselves and let them know what we're trying to do and what our purpose is.
It's so amazing and incredible.
Since we have, since we got our pilot's license, we were always trying to think of a way to utilize it for a bigger purpose. Because, getting your pilot, it's a really big deal because it's hard to get, but we wanted to do something useful with it. And since we've always kind of we're looking for a way to promote, women's education rights and also STEM education, like help students who are interested in STEM. We decided that we're going to do this journey and we're going to try our very best to get it done and accomplish this and bring awareness about these two subjects.
Well, I have so many questions, but I guess my very first one is, how are you feeling about it all?
I think we're both very excited. We've just done so much training and have so much experience at this point that we feel like we're ready. Our parents are obviously a little bit nervous, as any parent would be in such a journey, but they're very supportive. They want us to do what we love, and they're just saying that if you want to do it, then just put your 100% and do what you want to do. So
they're basically saying, don't do this like only one foot in, one foot out.
Yeah,
if you're gonna actually do this, put both feet in and we'll support you guys.
And what does having both feet in look like?
It means that, so we have been in California, DC, Florida, all in the past month preparing for this trip. We've met with the previous world record holder in 2021, Travis Ludlow, and he gave us advice on how to do this journey. Because he did it himself, and he's also the only pilot in his family. We've gone to California and did accelerated IFR training, which is very, very tough because it was 7-8 hours of flying.
Yeah, we would like wake up at like 5 or 6 a.m. We would study a little bit before lessons, then we'd go there and do ground school with our instructor until like 12, and then we'd go flying. And sometimes we didn't have time for lunch. So it was just very intensive. We would bring snacks on the way in case we landed somewhere, we could just eat a snack real quick. And then we ended our training around 6 o'clock p.m. and then we'd go home and study as well when we got home. So it was just a really full day full of things that we were supposed to do for the IFR training.
Yeah.
What is IFR training?
So IFR training is instrument flight training, and instrument flight training teaches pilots how to fly using instruments. So it's handy in cases where we're flying in bad weather or in like clouds, so low visibility conditions. And VFR training is like private pilot training. It's completely different because it has completely different sectionals, different approaches. You use different like mindset of thinking because you're not worried about visibility. But when you start doing IFR training, you start thinking in a completely new lens, and you start thinking about, okay, if I have bad weather happen to suddenly, or if I have clouds happen, what am I going to do? How am I going to get out of them? How am I going to fly the airplane? And it's very, some people say it's the hardest training to learn because you have to change your mindset as a pilot. So I mean, I guess some people's opinions might differ. Maybe some people thought it was easy, but we definitely thought that it was very intensive, and it was a good learning experience.
Yeah, I think it was a very good challenge. I think that's the right word,
especially since we're doing everything so quickly.
So how do two 18-year-old girls decide that they want a pilot's license? Like, where did that come from?
So we have always been interested in aviation. So the first time we flew an airplane, it was like when we were like 2 years old. And we had back and forth trips from India to the United States. So we used to fly in airplanes like almost every year. And then when we actually like got here and we stayed here permanently in the United States, we used to go to the local airport because we have Norfolk International, which is like a 30-minute drive. And we used to have picnics there with our parents. And we used to wave at the pilots and the passengers. There's this very long parking lot. We went to the very end, and it was right near the airplanes. And they used to take off, and this was us. And we just sat there for hours.
And the funny part was that they would actually wave back. So some of them would. So it was very funny and just enjoyable as like a little kid.
Yeah.
Being able to experience that.
It was like the highlight of our day, watching airplanes in the parking lot of Norfolk International. So
it's kind of, I mean, you guys went one step further because I mean, I traveled a lot on planes, but I haven't been motivated to get a pilot's license. Like, what hit you in this direction? Because it's a massive investment of education.
Yeah, so I think we truly got into like STEM and aviation in the eighth grade. So we took like a digital technology class, and in that we were introduced to STEM for the first time. We did stuff like build bridges, build like a rocket car, airplane design, like video game programming, things like that. And I think that's when our passion really grew, and we knew that we wanted to be in this field
and that we wanted to do something in aviation. And initially we didn't know that we could get our pilot license because, like I said, nobody in our family is a pilot, so we didn't know how to get it or what were the prerequisites. So we just kind of showed up to our local flight school one day, and we were like, we want to be a pilot. What do we have to do? And then they told us that for like the initial requirements, you just have to be at least 17 and you have to read, write, and speak English. And we were like, we can do that. So we started, we did a discovery flight that day, and they were like, is your stomach feeling weird at all? And we're like, nope. And they were like, okay, then you guys can definitely become pilots. You can do this training. So that was the day we started flight training. And that was in like 11th grade. So eighth grade, we got introduced to STEM. And then in 11th grade, we actually started flying.
Now, I know that STEM does really help with aviation, but some people might not make that connection of like STEM with flying planes.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about the connection you see?
So we were accepted into the Governor STEM Academy, and that's in Grassville High School. And the Governor STEM Academy, they had like a selection process. It was 60 kids from the city, and we kind of showcased our interest in STEM by kind of talking about our class that we took in eighth grade about the STEM class. And we kind of just, we gave them our resume about what we'd accomplished so far. And I guess they thought we were okay kids and they accepted us into the academy. So for 4 years in high school, we did normal high school classes with like rest of the high school, and then also STEM classes with only STEM students. And those were taught by like college professors. And in that time, we took aerospace engineering.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one of the subjects that we were introduced to. So we took like digital electronics, civil engineering, aerospace engineering, introduction to engineering, principles of engineering. So aerospace was one of the subjects in STEM. So we learned everything from designing airfoils to creating them on software and 3D printing them. How to design the most aerodynamic airplane, gliders, like all sorts of aviation stuff.
Yeah, like propulsion systems. There's just so much stuff that we learned. Like I can't even name it off the top of my head. But it was just everything aerospace.
We flew like on software, yeah. An actual a simulation airplane.
It was Plane X.
And we did flying on that, and it was graded. So at that time we were doing flight training, so we were helping our friends do it.
Yeah.
They were like, you guys have to do it in real life. You help us do it. So we would try to help them figure out how to fly their planes.
Yeah, we were kind of like the instructors, and we're like telling them, you know, look at your airspeed, look at, you know, your glide slope, things like that.
Yeah.
It was fun, but it was really just fun for our friends and us.
And needless to say, that was our favorite class and one of our favorite classes in STEM. Yeah.
So do you reckon that your STEM knowledge is making you better pilots, or your pilot knowledge is making you better engineers?
I think they're so interconnected because piloting is directly related to STEM, because in when you get your license, or when you're getting your license, they make you like you have to learn a lot of things regarding the aerodynamics of an airplane, how it functions, the instruments in the airplane, the physics affecting the airplane, and it's in weather obviously too. But you have to learn, like, it's not just how am I gonna fly the plane, the yoke, the rudder and stuff. It's also about like what is making the airplane fly, what affects it flying, like all the different environmental factors, physics factors. You also learn that. So it's not just like, you know, one, like you learn how to fly the plane, you also learn why the airplane flies, you learn how it flies. So it's very interconnected with STEM.
Yeah. And when you go on your amazing adventure, how can we kind of follow you guys?
Yeah, so we already have an Instagram account. We both have our separate Instagram accounts, and we actually upload like things on there every day, videos of our training,
we try to every day. Sometimes we're so busy that we don't have the chance to.
Like, you know, preparing for the trip, everything like that. It's on the Instagram page. And a lot of people have suggested like a Facebook page and a YouTube like page as well. So we're hoping that we can, you know, start one eventually. We're just right now, we're really focusing on, you know, taking off, preparing for it safety wise. So we've been kind of busy, but hopefully we can get to that soon as well.
But we also have a website, gmaneuver.com, that we've been running since 2021. So we've kind of been, it's been a few years that we've been doing this, that we had the thought of doing this. So it didn't just randomly spring up in our head that we wanted to fly around the world. We've kind of been like working towards this slowly ever since like, 2021. Mm-hmm. So, you know, geomanure.com, we do posts and stuff there too. And they're also informational posts. We like post about like our check ride when we took our written exam, you know, different aspects of training. It's like informational as well.
And actually, like, the main reason for GManeuver is to take like disadvantaged like children who like economically disadvantaged children, as well as students who want to like go on flight, or you know, want to go into aviation or STEM, so that they can experience it for the first time, and that we can just show them like the world of aviation. And we take, you know, kids and students all the time. We took like two people last week, and we're just trying to grow this as much as we can, and just be able to show everyone what this field really is, and if they want to be interested in it, they can.
Yeah, because one thing we noticed is that a lot of people can't afford to pay for like aviation, like flights. They can't afford to pay for it. So we pay for their discovery flights, which is like the first flight ever where you just like fly them around. And we introduce them to aviation. And the great thing about it is that that it's all like free. Like we give them that experience. And a lot of people say that they really want to get into aviation after the flight. So that's, you know, it's even one student who, you know, is interested in STEM and wants to get into STEM. That's great news for the industry.
Yeah. And like with those flights, we fund them like ourselves.
Yeah.
We do it like we're ED techs. And we have our EMT license, so we're EMTs. So we do like, we go to like work and we get save that money towards this. And we also do tutoring and other like things like that. And we actually save that money specifically for GManeuver and these students.
Yeah. So everything is out of pocket. But we're trying to afford it, without like additional income. But so that's why we're kind of limited on how many students we take up, but we try to do like a few every week.
That's so incredible. You answered my next question, because getting a pilot's license, I think so many people do assume that it's really expensive, and it's just like, yeah, you know, a world that is just requires a lot of funds, and what you're doing is so inspiring and so generous.
Yeah, and a lot of people assume that pilots have a lot of money or that, yeah, they have a lot of income, but most of the pilots that we have met and flown with, they either paid with that the money for flight training out of pocket, or mm-hmm, they went through like a university and the university helped them pay for it.
Yeah.
Likewise, like our parents helped us a little bit, but we also paid like some of the expenses ourselves. So it's, you know, even that stigma that pilots have to be rich to be a pilot, mm-hmm, is not true.
Yeah, and like a lot of people also take like loans and things like that. Like one of my flight instructors, he took like a loan with his parents kind of, and with like a bank. And so he was like paying each like party, so that's how he afforded his flight training. So there's like a lot of different avenues. There's now these days there's also like scholarships, and we actually do a scholarship through GManeuver as well, but there's like scholarships, there's opportunities these days, so I think it's becoming a lot more available to people, so I think that's like a great aspect.
Do we need more pilots, and how many women are pilots as a percentage?
We definitely need more pilots.
100%.
Like just recently there's this huge like pilot, mm-hmm, crisis where they couldn't find pilots during COVID, a lot of pilots, there wasn't anybody to fly the airplanes. I don't know if you heard about that, but pilot salaries have also gone way up because there are less amount of pilots than before, like earlier years. So mm-hmm, I think the salary now is in like 500,000s, that like you can work up to that.
Like, I don't think that's the initial one, payment, but that you can work up to it based on the year, how years you work with the company. And there's also not a lot of women that we don't see a lot.
I mean, I know there's like a percentage, I think it's like 6%, or I think it's growing steadily, but it's around 6% right now.
Pilots are women, yes.
But right, like in our flight school, like there was one like student who was female, and we've seen her like once or twice, but like not other than that. Most of like, you know, when we go to like the flight school, it's mostly male students and male instructors. And we only had one female flight instructor, but then she moved. So right now we have all male instructors at our flight school as well. So it's not like a lot of dynamic. I feel like we definitely need more, both, you know.
Like, it's at the point where if you see a female pilot, you're like, whoa, there's a female pilot. Like, that's, oh my God, take a picture. Like, we were at the airport, and in the airport, you see mostly male pilots, right? And we saw a female pilot, and we actually took a picture. We were like, Andrew, I was like, Andrew, there's a female pilot over there. And she was in uniform and everything. She looks so cool. But it's like kind of like when you go to the zoo and you're like, oh, look at that rare animal that there's only 2% of in the whole world.
Yeah. And there's something about, you know, like how there's a bunch of jokes about female drivers.
Oh, yeah.
There's some stigma around like female pilots. Do you want to like break that stigma right now?
Yeah, I mean, we actually faced a lot of that with like during our flight training. From like the beginning, you know, our flight instructors were like, oh, you can't do it. You can't, guys can't become pilots based on like absolutely nothing. We have met female pilots who are just as good, just as confident, just as able to do the things that a male pilot can do. And I just don't think that there should be any like restriction or like a lack of opportunities for females and female pilots in general.
Because what's the worst part is that there's this stigma that female pilots are not as skilled or cannot be as skilled as male pilots. So initially, when you just begin training, they automatically think that you have a disability, and they treat you like you have something wrong with you just because of your gender. And so when they do lessons, when they do lessons with you, like flight training, they treat you like a child. And I mean, it might be because we're young too, but they like coddle you. But we also noticed there's one other female pilot, and they also did the same to her. They took like 2 months teaching her the same thing that they would take 1 month to teach a male student. And they did the same thing with us. Like it took us like a year and a half. It took us a while to finish our training. And it wasn't because we were less skilled. It was because of our gender, because when we switched flight schools, we got our license in less than 2 weeks. Whereas they told us that it was going to take us like 3-4 more months. And we were like, we don't have 3-4 months. We need it now. So
I mean, it's kind of crazy because, you know, I don't want to generalize, but when women operate machines, they are so much more careful. Because when you think about how as a woman, I really multitask, you know, I'm able to do that. And my partner, who's male, like, he's extremely smart and, you know, skilled and talented, but he likes to just focus on one thing at a time. And I don't want to generalize.
Yeah.
But, you know, the idea that you're operating this machine that is suspended in the air, and operating it is someone that's able to think of one thing and other, like, juggle, is in some ways more comforting.
Yeah.
I think it's the same in flying. I feel like females are generally more careful. It's just, I feel like each gender, I don't want to like separate genders, but each gender has like specific traits that they're better in. And like females are better, like, you know, they're more calm, they're more able to, you know, focus at the task, but males are able to, you know, not really, you know, they have like other qualities that make them good pilots. So I feel like males are very analytical, like, yes. Male pilots, they're very like systematic, they go by the rules, by the lists.
But that's not to say like a female pilot can't be analytical, or they can't go by the books, or a male pilot can't be, you know, be able to like multitask or do things like that. So I don't really think there's like a generalization for each gender. It's, I feel like if we all work together, then we could just create like the ideal workplace, the ideal, you know, airline. So I think it's just working together where we can bring out the best qualities in each other.
And it's not like
diversity is key.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's not like the gender thing is not why this like disparity exists in aviation and STEM. It's because of like the societal views regarding females and males that are influencing, you know, piloting, aviation, you know, mechanics, industry, like if STEM. Mm-hmm. It's not the gender thing, it's the society, what they have, the values that they pushed on us.
And I actually have a funny story. I was doing flight training then. I was still a student back then. And I had done a presentation at school. So unfortunately, I was wearing a dress that one day. And I didn't have time to change because right after school, me and Ramnik would both drive to the local flight school and do training. So we would have just 5 minutes to, you know, run there really quick, and then we would start training. So I didn't have time to change, and I showed up to my, you know, training in a dress. And my flight instructor was like, "You can't fly. You're wearing a dress. Like, you're not going to be able to, like, you know, climb up the steps to check the fuel tanks. It just makes you not able to be more,
a pilot.
Yeah, it's just going to affect your ability somehow." And so he said, "Don't ever wear a dress again.
Or we're not going
flying. We're not going flying. I'm not taking you flying." So that was just very crazy. And I can't believe that actually happened, because, you know, you hear about those kind of things. But like, because of a dress.
Because even though like wearing a dress, I guess like it is, I guess, a little mm-hmm. restrictive, restricting your movements. You shouldn't point that out. Like, you shouldn't be like, "Well, just because you're wearing a dress, you can't fly," because that's not true.
Yeah, because
she flew.
Yeah, if I can do those things in a dress, then I don't
see. She did the whole flight in a dress. So, but he was like, "If you wear it next time, you're not flying."
Yeah.
So if that's not, I mean, you should be able to wear whatever you want. It's not mm-hmm. even male, female at that point. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a, you should wear whatever you want. She can show up in like a polka dot suit. Like,
yeah, I mean, it's your choice, it's your training,
it's your abilities.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
you know, I kind of, I don't know, I've come across these issues a lot as an engineer, and I don't see the dress issue as being a problem. Look, I completely appreciate that there are those kinds of disparities, but I get the dress thing because, and this is something I've really battled with myself, because in the past, if I've gone to speak at a conference and I'm wearing high heels, or if I've got into a lab, let's do that example. If I've got into a lab wearing high heels, it's not safe. Like, mm-hmm. it's actually better for me if I wear steel toe cap boots that are flat,
right,
stable, and things like that. And so on that point, like, just from a purely PPE kind of perspective, I get not wearing a dress when you're flying, because I don't know, like, it could blow up into the air, or, you know, if you are at a height and there are people below, you know, it's just kind of like if you were working on a bridge and you're wearing a dress and there are people underneath the bridge, they can look up and look up your dress. It's kind of, so in a way, kind of get it, but I could also see where it could be like moments where it's like, "Oh my gosh, you're singling me out because I'm female."
Yeah, I mean, it's not ideal, uh-huh. but that specific day, like, she didn't have, like, mm-hmm. didn't have the chance to change. So, you know, and flying in a dress, it's not, like you can still fly, like there's nothing wrong with wearing a dress, because like the lab example, that's like requirements, like that's, those are specific rules that you have to stay safe with. But with aviation, there's no, nothing that says this is your dress code or this is what you have to wear. And
and luckily that day I was wearing shorts underneath, but I do see like if someone was not wearing shorts where that could be a problem. But most people who would have to show up to something like that, I'm sure they would make sure that, like, you know, they are having, you know, like wearing something underneath, or they wouldn't, you know, be in a situation where something could go wrong like that. But I do, we do like understand your point. That's like a very valid point. It's also true, like in the medical field, they have like dress codes too. And like if you, we volunteered at the hospital, and at the hospital you couldn't like wear ripped jeans, or, and that was just the dress code for us. So,
but, you know, aviation doesn't have any such dress code because there's nothing that's going to, clothes are not going to debilitate your ability to fly. Like,
can I ask you, what do you prefer to wear when you're flying?
I mean, usually we just wear like jeans, or sometimes if I'm lazy, I wear pajamas
or like shorts,
or well, like that. Sleeping pajamas, but like, you know, comfortable exercise like
joggers.
Yeah. Yeah. Black pink.
I think the message here is a really beautiful one, which is, do what makes you feel confident and empowered. You know, if there is no dress code, I think, and I've had conversations on my podcast before with other women where they say, I dress to feel strong and empowered and resilient, you know. And if wearing high heels actually makes you feel like you're not very strong on your feet, and actually, or it might be that wearing high heels does empower you. It gives you height, it gives you presence, you're confident. Like, I think if you're not breaking any rules, the lesson here is do what makes you feel like at your best.
Right.
You know. And you are at, like, you're onto an amazing opportunity to inspire others, not just in the States, but globally. How are you planning to convey that message? Like, I'm picturing you guys like flying and then landing in all these like random places. Like, what do you do once you're on the ground to inspire?
Once we're on the ground, so like for our world trip, we're planning on broadcasting the whole thing. And we're planning on doing like taking videos every day and broadcasting them, hopefully live if we have internet access. But on the ground, I mean, we're thinking of, I think we're going to be so tired that we're not going to be able to actively do anything in the places we visit. And we're going to try. But we're planning on flying like 6 to 7 hours per day, every day. And so I think we're probably, like, we're going to come on the ground and we're going to find a nice little place to sleep. Maybe it's like a straw mat somewhere in a barn and we're going to fall asleep there. So we don't have any
no plan. There's no plan of where you get to and where you stay and how you eat and none of that.
So we are doing that like while we're doing our planning. And we're going to be doing the Atlantic trip first and the world afterwards. We're still figuring out all the details for that. But we do like have to make sure we have like a place to stay or an idea of where we're going to stay.
But there's like that. But there are like circumstances where sometimes something happens, you don't have, you know, that's the place that you wanted to go or the place you want to eat that's not available. Like Travis told us that he specifically like he had to sleep in a I think he said a shed. He had to sleep in a shed because his lodgings he just didn't, he wasn't able to get them, like I think they overbooked or something. And so he said, I slept there. I started flying again the next day. So there's definitely going to be difficulties, and there's definitely going to be problems, because it's such a long journey. There's 100% we're going to have something go wrong. So we're just going to try our best to prepare for it. And we're going to try our best to be safe the whole flight.
I'm sorry, but this needs to be on Netflix. Because you remind me of a series, The Happiness Diaries. I think it was The Happiness Diaries. But basically, Leo Thogas or something. I can't remember how to say his surname. He basically bought a yellow motorbike, mm-hmm. and he went around the world with no money and no plan. And oh. No, sorry, the kindness diaries. Mm-hmm. Because his trip was all about people being kind. Mm-hmm. And so he was relying on the kindness of others to get around the world. And, you know, people kindly gave him gas and kindly gave him a place to stay. And he documented it all. But he didn't have a documentary before he went on the trip. He ended up making a documentary a few years after the trip. Mm-hmm. So I do highly recommend that you do film everything and, you know, just create like video diaries and blogs and, you know, because it's just such an amazing adventure with such a beautiful purpose, mm-hmm. you know.
Wow. Hopefully that can happen one day. So we're going to try.
What's the plan for after this year?
After we're going to college, that starts in the fall. So we're going to be going back to school. But we're hoping that in college itself, we want to continue flying. And we also want to continue aviation. So we were hoping to do our undergraduate in either mm-hmm. aerospace or mechanical engineering or physics, something yeah. like that. And then we really want to start our own on-demand vehicle drone company, because that's some research we're working on right now as well. Mm-hmm. So we want to make and design our own medic air taxis and create that. And hopefully those will be flying around in the future, and they'll be created from our company. So that's like our future plans.
Wow. Oh, you guys are amazing. Just so incredibly amazing. I wish you all the best with your trip. I don't know how you're going to go back to like being at uni after that year. I mean, it's just going to be, but you know, maybe you end up, who knows what you're going to see that's going to shape what you want to do in the future and how and stuff like that. But the bravery will show.
Definitely different. Yeah, we're just like looking forward to like the journey itself, and you know, meeting, you know, people from those different countries, and you know, talking to them if you know we're, you know, like getting off our airplane or something, and we have the opportunity to talk to some people from that country, you know, talking about them, hearing about their lifestyle, their culture, things like that, and just taking all of that with us as we're going around the world and bring it back here when we come home. So we just want to do something like that where we can just bridge the gap between different countries and just show that like each culture, each country is just unique and amazing in its own way.
And are you going to get a chance to go back to your roots?
To India? Yeah. We're hoping to, hopefully. Because our mom wants to do a welcome party there. So we're hoping to go there. We definitely want to fly through India, but we'll see.
Yeah, based on like airspace restrictions and things like that, we'll see.
We kind of had to keep a lookout for because in that part, like, the Asia area, we have to look out for China, Russia, Ukraine, their mm-hmm. Conflicts that are happening.
And so we're trying to find airspaces that we can fly in without any trouble, because we don't want to be held back in the country. And because that's not only going to impact your timeline, but it's also dangerous for us. So we don't want to be detained anywhere. So we're trying to find the best flight
path
to fly. Because that's flying. What's the question?
What aircraft are you flying?
We're trying to fly. We actually are going to be flying a Diamond aircraft. So, because we were initially trying to fly a Cirrus, but Cirrus aircrafts require a lot of training, and they're not easy to find. There's not a lot of people who own Cirruses, but Diamonds are more readily available, and they're training aircraft, so they're easier to transition into. So, Diamond.
So, from door to door, how many miles do you think you're going to cover in 1 year?
I think the last time we looked at it, it was like around like 25,000 miles or 30,000 miles or something like that. It was around that for like the entire world. But it just depends on if we don't go, because that's around the world like in a straight line. So that's obviously, it's going to be more than that based on like the different routes we take and different stops we have.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, you know something, I have goosebumps for you guys because I think it's going to be amazing and challenging and scary at times, but also it's going to bring you the biggest joy and it's going to be a once in a lifetime experience. I'm so happy you've got each other. I don't know why.
The idea we wouldn't even be doing this if we didn't enjoy STEM and aviation. So I mean, that's partly why we're doing this. Like, it's such a huge trip and a huge commitment. Because we've been working towards this every single day for the past 4 or 5 months, like actively. So it's a huge commitment as well. Like, so much time spent on this. So
yeah, and we like decided we're gonna do this like 2 years ago when we started like our pilot license. We were like, you know, at the end of this, how are we going to use that to like do the most good or reach the most amount of people?
So initially, we wanted to do a free, like a free of cost, like kind of like a nonprofit ambulance service, air ambulance, where we fly the patients. But we learned that we have to have a few more like there are different requirements for that if we want to work for a company. So we couldn't do that. So then this was the next step. We're like, okay, let's see what else we can do with our license. So a world trip.
Out of curiosity, because I'm hearing from a few things you're saying that you've got like a bit of medical experience as well. Like, is there, have you been inspired by doctors or people in healthcare in your family?
Specifically in our family, we actually don't have a lot of people in healthcare. Most of our family is in business. Our mom was a RN, so she has some medical background, but she's not practicing right now. But the thing about, you know, we notice in the medical field is that, it's the same as aviation. Like pilots and doctors, they're both so hardworking and they spend so much time, and both of them are responsible for the lives of people. So it's the same responsibility on their shoulders. So the two professions are very closely related. And we kind of noticed that because we started volunteering at the hospital a few years ago. And it was mostly because we wanted to do something in our free time that was actually helping others. And we have a pretty big hospital nearby. So when we started volunteering there, we noticed that, you know, medical professionals work so hard and pilots work like, it's like the same load of work. And
yeah, to add to that, like the medical field is going in a direction where in the future, like in a few years, it's going to be all like, you know, STEM based, engineering based. Right now it's so much of it is engineering based, like all the machines and things to do like anesthesiology. You have to know physics, the physics of how each like medicine works, things like that. So it is
like, it's like one of those STEM fields that's very interconnected with, you know, STEM in general. So in the future, I feel like if more people do STEM, then it would just be better for all the different like healthcare, different careers in general, because like every job in the world is heading towards that direction where everyone needs to know STEM, everyone needs to know how to work with technology and things like that.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I am absolutely amazed by your forward thinking, your visionariness, and I'm excited that for you that you are doing this adventure, because it is just so, it's such a big undertaking that you will not fail to get noticed. And I'm so happy that you are putting yourselves out there to help so many people and really change the course of STEM in the future. So thank you so much, and I wish you all the best, and I'm going to be following you every step of the way.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
But I think it's also very important to acknowledge that we're going to be the first I guess colored females who are going to be doing this as well, so I think that's also very important to acknowledge. And it's because, you know, it is harder and there are more difficulties, and so you know, I think that's also very important. So, you know, thank you so much, and we're hoping that all the, you know, things that we've gone through and all the different obstacles we face to kind of help us succeed even further in life, and that, you know, this journey goes well. So yeah.
I'm seeing two beacons of light that are shining the way, and honestly it makes my heart so full to think of all the little girls out there, boys too, but the little girls out there that look at you guys and go, wow, I want to be like them one day.
So that's like the biggest compliment.
Yeah.
So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. And please do subscribe to this podcast and maybe even rate and review it if you can. The more ratings and reviews, then the more interest from those trusty algorithms, which could help to increase the reach of this show. And you can watch the video recording of this conversation on YouTube for my new series called Esteemed Women. It's all about self-discovery and self-evolution on innovation. So as always, be kind and loving to yourselves, and I wish you all a great week.